Okay.
And just so all the attendees are aware, we have new individuals attending the meeting today. Our meetings are public meetings. They are recorded. And a transcript is also collected of the meeting. The minutes will be posted publicly on the ADOA website. Keith, you're good to go.
Yes, ma'am. Today is Monday, the the 10th of July. It is 1:04 p.m. and I'm calling the meeting of the District South IOC to order. First of all, I'd like IOC members to introduce themselves. Octavia?
Are we introducing each other now?
Yeah.
Gail Lamb, IOC member with District South.
Okay. Rachel?
Hi, I'm Rachel Kundrat, IOC member, District South, parent provider. Grateful to be here. Thanks for your service.
No problem. And where is he? Oh, Mario.
Hi, good afternoon. Mario Gutierrez, IOC District South Vice Chair.
Sorry, lost your name on the list there for a minute. My name is Keith Jansen. I'm the District Chair for District South Independent Oversight Committee. Okay. Michelle, would you do the honors? You know everybody.
Yes, Keith, I certainly would. It's not a problem. I'll start with myself. My name is Michelle Rademacher. I am the DDD Independent Oversight Committee Liaison for District South, District North, and District West, and currently I'm covering District East and District Central.
Wow, you're doing all the districts.
Leah Gibbs, would you introduce yourself for us, please?
I am honored. Good morning. I'm Leah Gibbs, afternoon. I'm the Administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs here for DDD.
Thank you. And Joan McQuaid?
Hi, I'm Joan McQuaid. I'm with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs. I'm a manager and I'm here supporting Michelle.
Thank you. Joe Tracewell?
Hi, Joe Tracewell, District South Quality Assurance Manager.
Thank you. JJ Jensen?
JJ Jensen, District South QA Supervisor.
Thank you. Andrew Miller?
Hello, I'm Andrew Miller. I'm one of the Incident Management Specialists here in South.
Thank you. Dawn McReynolds?
Hi there, everybody. This is Dawn McReynolds. I am United Healthcare's Office of Individual and Family Affairs Administrator.
Thank you. Ian Wilson?
Yeah, hello, everybody. My name is Ian Wilson. I'm the onboarding patient advocate and veteran liaison working with Dawn.
Welcome. Thank you. Larry Allen?
Good afternoon, Larry Allen with ADOA. I'm the AO, or the state liaison for the Independent Oversight Committees.
Thank you. Frederica Graham.
Hi, everyone. This is Frederica Graham, the IOC manager with Access.
Thank you. Christine Scott.
Hi, I'm Christine Scott and I'm with Access.
Thank you. And Sam Shepard.
Hi, I'm Sam Shepard. I'm not on this committee, obviously. I'm attending as a guest, but I'd connected with Joan and then you, Michelle. I'm the founder of 3DA, which is a nonprofit that serves to advocate for individuals with developmental disabilities. And right now we're in connection with different groups in obviously Arizona, Hawaii, now New Hampshire, and then Minnesota as well. So I'm just excited to be here and potentially join this committee. I'm just kind of curious to kind of see with my own eyes what it's all about. So thank you for having me.
Thank you and welcome. So did I miss anyone? Has everybody had an opportunity to introduce themselves?
If you haven't introduced yourselves, say no. Okay. I just want to thank everybody for coming today. I'm glad we have a good sized turnout. Welcome, Mr. Shepherd. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
And so we're going to do the discussion of the open meeting law, which is basically the law that says there are certain standards that have to be followed when we're doing this portion of the meeting. In case you don't know, Mr. Shepherd, just to explain this to you, this is the open portion of the meeting. If we were to go into an executive session and talk about things that were protected, then we would have to vote to go to an executive session, and only people that are on the IOC or with the state that can go to that meeting that have access mm-hmm. to that information could go.
That makes just complete sense. Okay.
The okay. idea of the difference. But mm-hmm. There are still certain rules and regulations that have to be followed whenever we go through an open meeting law, you know, the open meeting. So we're still trying to get acquainted with those. They just had sent them out to us not too many months ago to make sure everybody is following the same rules and they are implementing them. Any questions, sir?
No, that all makes complete sense. Thank you.
Any questions from any other members in the IOC?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Octavia?
No, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I said no.
And, Rachel, any question?
No, sir, just getting on the computer.
Okay, not a problem. Larry, any updates on open meeting law or reminders of what we should be doing?
Hello, Keith. Yeah, a couple of reminders. We need to, when we start a meeting, we need to ask the committee if there's any conflict of interest. And if so, why there's a conflict. Okay. So we need to do that at the very beginning of the meeting. So that's the first item that we need to say before we even start the meeting. Other than that, I mean, open meeting law is so broad. I mean, there's so many different areas in it. Do you have any specific questions? I know we had a training back in June, beginning of June, a month ago, I guess, roughly. Yep. And that information, that the audio training, the audio of that training and the PowerPoint slides are posted on the IOC website under the resources tab. So feel free to go to that tab and look at that PowerPoint and listen to the audio. I think it's very beneficial once you go through the training and you go back through it again another time to kind of reinforce it, and maybe even another time, because there's just so much to it. And I think we kind of see the potholes that we're trying to avoid here in the meetings. One would be, even though the conflict of interest doesn't really pertain to the open meeting law, that's more of an attorney general ruling, but the open meeting law, you're looking at, you know, going into executive session, the one thing that we have been missing is that we are not putting the reason why we want to go into executive session. So we need to know prior to the meeting if we're going to be going into executive session. So if we say, like, today you wanted to go into executive session, you couldn't do it. because we need to be
put on the agenda.
Correct.
You can enter new items onto the agenda.
Correct. So we need to be as transparent as possible. And I think that's the spirit of the rule, right? The transparency. That's the one thing. The other thing, other big things for the committees, would be quorum. Okay. And we've kind of been operating under, especially the smaller, committees that like yourself that have four members, right? So we kind of went into uncharted waters there for a couple months where I didn't really know how to navigate that. So I was just going off 50% plus one, right? I mean, that's usually the general rule for quorum, but the statute says no more than 15 and no less than 7. Okay. So 7 is the number we have to work off of. So that being said, you can have 4, right? So your committee is a total of 4, but you can't have any less than 4. So if you have four people in your committee, you had 3 show, you don't have quorum, even though you've practically almost have 100% attendance, that you still don't have quorum. So those are just the little nuances that we need to work through and kind of work with you and your committee on as we move forward. But I think those are the two big items that that really affect the IOCs. Yeah. The others are just, staying on the agenda,
Yeah. Rachel, do you have any question? You're on mute.
Sorry about that. So you said 7, we needed 7, but then you said 4. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. So to have a quorum of, for if you had 7 members, you need 4 members, right? So you need 50% plus 1. Yeah. So I was operating off 4, but then I was taking it to another step where I was doing 50% of 4. So if I had 3 people show, then I was counting that as a quorum, which technically it's really not a quorum. So in the eyes of the state. So
basically, yeah, so Sam, the reason they do that is the more people you have on your committee, the easier it is to make quorum. So correct. If you have 15 people, you need 8 to make a quorum. Well, that's just barely over half. So you can have a whole bunch of people that are traveling or doing whatever. They can't make the meeting, and you can still make quorum and do official business.
Well, let me back up a little bit. So if you had, say you had 12 people on your committee, right? You still need 50% plus 1. So you still need your 7 people. So yeah. you can't just say 4 people will make quorum if you have 12 members.
Yeah, understand, but that's
okay. Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
The bigger committee, we can have up to 15 people, Sam, on the committee, 7 to 15. So if you have 15, you only need 8, and you'll have quorum. So it makes it easier. The more people you have, and when this committee years ago before COVID hit, we were a larger committee. It was easier to make quorum because if one person misses. Right now, we can't make quorum. The more people we get, then if somebody's on vacation, we can still make quorum. Is that easy enough to understand? Okay. Rachel, Marie Kendra, does Michelle count? No, Michelle does not count. You have to be an IOC member. She is a state employee. She can't be an IOC member.
Correct. Now you can have
interest.
Yes, you can have a non-voting member on your committee. Say, like, if they're a provider, or if you have more of a more providers, they're members of a provider that are part of the committee, and they can't be a voting member, but they can be kind of a consultant to your committee, but a non-voting member. Then they don't count as quorum either. So. There's different ways to do things. It's just all how you set your committees up and in your subcommittees, because you can have subcommittees. And that kind of
a big enough committee. One thing I can say that we've been doing correctly is anytime we've gone into IR, which is extremely rare for us, Sam, we have had it on the agenda and the announcement has been made and we've gone into it using proper procedure. So let me ask, just so I'm staying out of trouble, is there anybody here who has any conflict of interest with anything that is on the agenda today? I don't hear anybody saying yes.
Statement again.
Does anybody here have any objection to anything that's on the agenda today or conflict of interest?
I haven't looked at the agenda. I'll look at it real quick. Sorry.
I'm good with it. Thank you.
Okay. We're not going to be voting on anything. We're not going to be doing any contracts or anything, which is part of the open meeting law. We don't have the authority to do that. So that makes it real easy to. But today's agenda is a very basic one. We list 2 hours, just so you understand, Sam. We list 2 hours. I've been doing this for years. And there's only been twice where we've gone 2 hours. So, you know, you're going to have, if you decide to join, it's not going to be, oh, well, it says two, but you went four. We don't do that because we got state employees and other employees that have to get to their jobs. And also, if you were to join, Larry here is Arizona Department of Administration. The reason we're independent is we help out with these with another chain of command, but yet if we have questions we can step out from them and go over to Larry and say, hey, what about this, because that way nobody has a sway over us, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, so I'm another resource for the committee. We're here to I'm here to help with Michelle as well and everybody else at DDD and to help make sure that the committee gets everything they need to conduct their business.
And to slap my hand when I do something wrong. Okay. No.
Any other questions on open meeting law? I will post the link to the training in the chat. And also, Sam, if you haven't had a chance to look at the IOC website, feel free to snoop around, look at the agendas, look at the meeting minutes, look at the IOC manual, which I am updating, by the way, to reflect some new legislature changes that were done last session, and update the conflict of interest language in there as well. So that manual is being redone as we speak. So I'll let everybody know when that's ready to look to take a look at. But in the meantime, I'll put some links in the chat. And please let me know if you have any questions on open meeting law. Feel free to email me directly or Michelle directly, whoever. We'll make sure the question gets answered.
And just so you know, Sam, do you got a paper and pencil? My name is Keith Jansen, and if you have any questions, feel free to call me at 520-456-5403, and I will answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's always nice to have the personal contacts. Okay, so does everybody understand about open meeting law? And everybody that I saw had like a thumbs up. Or Octavia, did you have any problems with the agenda? You're on mute.
Okay.
Can't hear you.
No.
Okay, thank you. And Mario,
no, I did not.
Mario, you said you didn't have any problems?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay.
So like I mentioned, the open meeting law training was approximately 90 minutes. So it takes a while to through it. So please take some time to sit through it if you haven't already. If you have sat through it, please do it again. I think it's beneficial. I really do. So again, please let me know if you have any other further questions on it.
Okay.
Michelle?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that we do have the agenda set up where we have the information about the executive session included on the agenda. And I think that if your committee still wants to have an option at each and every meeting to go into an executive session, I think the only thing we would need to add is to add it as a standing agenda item. And then you would have the option if the committee chose to vote. But the only caveat there is the committee would have to explain publicly, I believe, why they were going into executive session. Would that be correct, Larry?
It also needs to be on the agenda.
Yeah, she said that.
It needs to be listed on the agenda as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So as a standing agenda item, that would be okay?
No, you have to have the reason why you're going into executive session.
Yeah, you'd have to put executive session to discuss IRs or whatever.
Okay, so currently the agenda says, it has a disclaimer at the bottom that says executive mm-hmm. session information. It mm-hmm. says the committee may vote to go into executive session pursuant to ARS 41-1959 and ARS 38-431.03. It cites A1 and A2, and then it goes on further to say to discuss or consider the appointment of new members and or to discuss incident reports and behavior plans concerning members of the Division of Developmental Disabilities of the Arizona Department of Economic Security. Members of the public are required to leave if the committee votes to go into executive session. So we do state why we would go into executive session, but we don't have it on the list of agenda items.
Correct. You still need to list it on the agenda.
Okay. But so our disclaimer would cover the specifics as to why we were going into executive?
No.
No, when you say you're going to, we're going, you know, you put it as a line item. We're going into executive session. That's where you put the description.
Correct.
As to why we're going into. We can go into executive session for two or three reasons, you know, and you just give, you don't have to give a real specific, but you have to give a general idea why we're going into that executive session, such as to discuss IRs.
Right. So, okay. if you had an IR where you really wanted to talk about somebody's PHI, which is personal health information, or PII, then you really need to worry about that discussion. And then that would be something that hopefully a committee member or somebody would read before the meeting and say, look, and they would email Keith and yourself and say, I want to go into executive session to discuss this in more detail because this is something that might be a HIPAA violation and we don't want to do that. Then that was something we would do. That would be really the only.
That's what we've done the twice we've gone in, both times.
Yeah, and that would be really
on the agenda and what we were gonna, you know, broad, because you don't want to give it away to the general public, but a broad description of why we were going. And the two times that we've had to go into executive session, it was listed on the agenda, and we voted to go into executive session, and then we went into executive session. And then we discussed what was basically on the agenda. So, like I said, we've only had to do it twice that I can remember.
I'll post a link to that into the chat as well. statute.
Okay.
And for the group. And, you know, again, it's lengthy and it lists 9 reasons why you can go into it. Now, I believe 9 of the reasons really don't really pertain to the IOCs and what we do.
No.
But I think with what we're doing here, trying to protect the health and personal information of a member, that will be the right reason why you would want to go into executive session. So.
Yeah. And if you watch the training, it will go into ideas of where you might not, you know, might not apply to us because we don't do certain things that you would have to go into executive session for as an IOC. I wish we could, money and all that good junk, but we just don't. But anything, it's just to protect any sensitive health information, basically, is why we would go into executive session, or to protect any, private information. Understand, Sam?
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other than that, the public, we do this like we're doing right now. The public gets to hear and see what's going on. If they have a problem, they can speak up, or a suggestion. They can speak up when they're called on. But so at any time during this meeting, if you have a question or you need to speak up, just, do the icon. Okay, after this, we were going to talk about the statewide chairs meeting. One of the things I wanted to discuss on this, especially because, Rachel, you're rather new, is although it's called the statewide district chairs meeting, any IOC member can go to that. And matter of fact, they're encouraged to go to that meeting because that way you get to hear what the IOCs are hearing. And it actually saves us time from saying, okay, now the IOC chairs have heard it. Now we got to go back and explain it to everybody. Well, if we had people at the meeting, it makes it easier to explain. And the more ears you have hearing it, the better off you are. Understand? Just out of curiosity, do you think you might want, the next state chairs meeting is not this Wednesday, it's on the 18th, and they finally moved it into the evening at 5:30 to 7:30. They did that so people that were at work could have a chance to get home and attend the state meeting. Just so you understand. Rachel, do you think you might be going to that, or attending that on the computer?
Yeah, I can do that. 5:30 to 7:30, July 18th. That's a Tuesday. I'm sorry?
I said yes.
Okay. And I'll find the link somewhere in my emails, probably.
What's going to happen is whoever says yes, I've already talked to Michelle. What she's going to do is just send out an invitation to whoever says yes, and you'll get the invitation. And where you click the blue thing to get into this meeting? There'll be the same type thing, except you'll be going to the state meeting. So you understand, Sam, we have those about every 3 months. We have 4 state meetings a month. And that's where all the districts get together. It's run by the Independent Oversight Committee chairs. But we still have other people from the state and vendors and stuff there to give us updates. And maybe new things they found out or things that work for them that we may want to try, but it's done for independent oversight committees, but it's a way for us all to get together and keep in contact. That way nobody feels isolated.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted you to understand that and everybody else to understand that. Octavia, you're going to be going?
I will try. I'm not completely sure if I can.
Okay, I didn't know if you were going to have to because of what you do otherwise. And Mario, do you think you'll be going?
Yes, I plan to attend it.
Okay. Yeah, and I like it because it's, we've always had it from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. Now it's going to be 5:30 to 7:30. So we don't have to worry about people that are at work. They have a chance to get home. So it's we're trying this as a convenience and seeing what happens. So Michelle, if you would send invitations out to us all, please.
Certainly.
Okay. Not trying to make too much work for you. But that's why I wanted to bring that up so you understood that any IOCs can go to that and listen in. Question, Larry.
Yes, sir.
Can anybody from the public go to the IOC meetings? The state IOC meetings?
Yes, I believe we've had some people from the public show up at that meeting.
Yeah, because it's a state open meeting. So that's the way I understand it, according to regulation.
Correct. Yes. You all have conducted that meeting totally transparent. And it is open to the public and it's posted on our website for all to attend. And so, yes, public can attend.
Sam, what I was going to ask you is, do you think you might be interested in, you know, seeing what's going on around the state?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely interested in that meeting as well.
Michelle, you have his email address?
Yes, Keith, I do.
Would you like an invitation? Sam?
Yeah, sorry.
That way you'll just be able to go in and click the button and, mm-hmm. you know, okay, you're there.
Yeah, make no, it for easy sure, thank for you. You.
Just trying to help out. That's part of my job. Okay, that's what I wanted people to understand about the state IOC meeting. Now we're going to talk about Division of Developmental Disabilities staff updates. Who do we have here from DDD?
Keith, would you like me to introduce the
yes,
for the
please.
Updates? Okay. All right. We'll start there. No problem. Leah, would you like to start us off pretty please?
Did you say briefly?
Pretty please.
Well, we got 2 hours, so.
I know. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm Leah Gibbs. I'm the administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs here for DDD. It's good to see you all. And welcome, Sam.
Thank you.
I do have some updates for you. I want to start by letting you know that the division has been introducing some new teams of people to support our support coordination teams around the state. We have established what we're calling onboarding units, which are specialized support coordination units that are training new staff. We've had a lot of new hires over the last several months, and these onboarding units are helping our new employees shadow other folks for about 3 months while they go through their learning courses. It's been an opportunity for those folks to be able to feel much more confident and comfortable in taking on their own caseloads and working further to support people with disabilities in the state. And these onboarding units seem to be working out very, very well.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Because we got Sam here. I just want to make sure, Sam, what she's talking about is they're onboarding paid state employees.
Yeah,
and helping
our
them
coordinators
understand
are like our case managers. They're like our case managers for folks.
Just so you understood it, okay. You know.
Okay. Sam, I don't know what you know and what you don't know, but feel free to ask.
Okay, thank you.
We have also established or in the process of establishing a new operations team that support our support coordinators. They're kind of a look behind to make sure that the support coordinators are getting the support that they need to be successful in working with our members and families. And so both those units are up and running and going to continue to grow. the division as a division is really excited about our opportunity that we're in the process of trying to receive an accreditation. We'll be working with the National Committee of Quality Assurance in seeking an accreditation on providing support coordination for long-term services and supports for eligible people. What that means for us is that we can are always trying to improve our process of how our members and families receive support from the division. And in the process of this accreditation, it's going to help us to make sure that we are publicizing and transparent, and that people are aware of our systems of support, that our members understand what their responsibilities are in addition to what we do. And it's something that we are shooting for late next year, 2024. It's going to take time, but over the next year, you'll be seeing some ongoing public comment periods for updated policies that are related to compliance with this NCQA accreditation process. And as members of the IOC, you see those 30 days prior to them going out for regular public comment. If they are major changes or if they are new policies for us. In addition,
just to let you know, Sam, because of people like Leah, sorry to interrupt, Leah, okay, but I got to give you a big, because of people like Leah and these other state employees that are here, Arizona is number one in the treatment of the developmentally disabled in the entire country. And we have been for several years. We just want to keep it that way.
We absolutely, that's awesome. We absolutely want to keep it that way. In addition, just some updates around the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA funding that the division has been able to receive. We did get directed payments out again this year, like we did last year, to our qualified vendor network of providers. What that is funds that went directly to the qualified vendor agency for the purpose of them hiring and recruiting new direct care worker staff, and also to retain existing staff. And they are allowed to use those funds for things like bonuses or stipends or one-time payments. The one thing they're not permitted to do is to use it as salary wages, because those come through a different kind of pot of money, and they don't want to be making commitments with that money and then not being able to maintain those wages when the ARPA money goes away. But we did get out our directed payments for this year, and we have plans to do that again next year. We have a couple of different things happening around supporting our members who have co-occurring behavioral health needs in addition to their intellectual or developmental disabilities. The division has been developing a specialized type of living group home situation that we have been calling an enhanced behavioral group home. Those enhanced behavioral group homes are up and running, and they are designed for people with pretty complex needs. Over this last legislative session, there was a House bill that was passed and signed by the governor that is introducing a new type of a license for an enhanced behavioral group home that is called a behavioral supported group home. And the work that the division did in developing our enhanced behavioral group home is very much in alignment with the requirements of this legislation. We'll just be doing a couple of tweaking of our service specifications to indicate that those homes will be specialty licensed through the Department of Health Services. With the new requirement, what will happen is the Department of Health Services will be making rules around those homes and those requirements. And it'll take a little while for those things to happen, but as they happen, the division will no longer be referring to our homes as enhanced behavioral group homes. They will be behavioral supported group homes. We also continue to work on using some of those ARPA funds specifically for educating behavioral health professionals in the state who are working with people who have co-occurring behavioral health and intellectual and developmental disabilities. We want to train those provider agencies on what are best practices and successes for working with people with IDD. We have been identifying some existing training that is available. We will be developing our own training around the Division of Developmental Disabilities so that we can continue to improve those relationships between the behavioral health agencies and the division as we concentrate and focus on the member's success. In addition to that, we are looking at a couple of two-day-long seminar conferences that would be specific for behavioral health professionals around the state, one in the Phoenix area, one in the Tucson area, that will probably roll out next year. And that will also be an opportunity to be able to help some of the behavioral health professionals better understand best practices for working with our folks. Those conferences are going to be geared for allowing for continuing education credit for the professionals that attend to hopefully get more people interested and to come out for those. We also continue work on our project around positive behavioral support. We are in the process of finalizing a curriculum that will be able to be utilized by qualified vendors for their direct support professionals, as well as making it available through one of our contracted agencies for free to family caregivers for members that are supported with the division. We are also going to mandate that that training be required for all of the direct support professionals that work for our state-operated programs, our state-operated group homes, and our state-operated independent care facilities. As part of that training, we will be doing an incentive for qualified vendors in that if they get their staff through the training, we'll be able to pay them for that training time and what's involved in pulling them off the line while they're not doing direct care, while staff are learning those new skills. We are also going to be aligning with our independent contractor to have a weekly technical assistance drop-in session for people who have taken the training to be able to come back together if they are trying to implement strategies or have questions about what they've learned, so that there will be ongoing support. And lastly, we will be rolling out a train the trainer so that we will be paying vendors to have their training staff come in to take the training so that they can deliver it to their direct support professionals and be able to have that part of rolling out that process. As of right now, we hope to have the curriculum completed by October 1st. Between October and January, we'll be doing outreach with the provider community, and come January, start the train the trainer, and then open up for that positive behavior support training in the spring of next year. So we're very excited to get that rolled out and working on that project. Just so that you know, we continue to be working on what we're going to utilize for our data collection process so that we can demonstrate the success of getting positive behavior support training throughout the delivery system of any direct care worker who is interested in learning that material. And our hope is that it will become a way of doing business moving forward with the relationship with the vendor community and to support our family caregivers. Let's see, what else do I have? I know Michelle, keep it short, but there's things going on out there. We are in the process of announcing a new qualified vendor application and agreement. It's been almost 10 years since we've updated our contract that we have with our qualified vendor community. And we are going to be rolling out a new one that all 800-ish qualified vendors who are on contract with the division will need to recontract with this new request for qualified vendor application. That process is going to start in September of this year, with a tentative process of that new contract going into effect in March of 2024, which gives plenty of time for agencies to be able to sign up for that new contract. We've done some outreach, and it appears that there should be very little to no direct impact to members and families receiving the services through this transition time. If for some reason a vendor decides they don't want to continue to contract, we will be working with members and families to assure that their services continue. So that's a new project that's rolling out. Another new one is that we continue to work with our stakeholders in the community, and periodically we hear back from some of those advocacy organizations that there is misinformation being shared in social media about DDD, about programs, about initiatives, and those kinds of things. And in the process of trying to get in front of that a little bit, the division has started developing what we're referencing as quick reference guides. We're following in the steps of Access and their OIFA empowerment tools, which are one-page documents designed to be in plain language on a particular topic to help get information out that is factual and accurate to the community. These one-page guides are several are under development. We have three already posted and on our members and families public webpage. As we roll these out, we'll be working with some of our other contacts in the community to make sure that those flyers are out and available to members and families. They're all in English and Spanish. Topics that are already posted to our webpage, there's information to help families who have more than one insurance to understand how to coordinate benefits for their pharmacy benefits. We have one that's posted around the Access Redetermination Eligibility Project that they have been implementing since April of this year. With the public health emergency unwinding, people who had been enrolled in Access were not getting redetermined eligibility through the public health emergency, and Access is now being required to redetermine eligibility for all almost 2 million people that are signed up for the Access program. It's not just DDD, it's all of the different Access programs. So we have information on a one-page flyer to help families understand that redetermination and how important it is that we have current contact information and current addresses on file so that when Access is ready to do that outreach, they don't have any barriers in contacting that member or their family to get the redetermination done. And the last one right now that is up is the current status of the parents as paid providers for their minor children. This particular eligibility was put in place at the beginning of the public health emergency to help families who really were concerned about how many people were coming in and out of their home during the public health emergency, as well as experiencing the shortage and finding direct support providers for their children and their service needs. That particular flexibility, allowing parents to be the paid providers for their minor children, had been scheduled to end at the end of the public health emergency and was scheduled to be supported through the ARPA funds. However, very recently, Access has announced that they are working with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that they are planning to put in an amendment to make that particular flexibility permanent. And Access has publicized that they are doing a couple of public forums, inviting people who would like to hear the conversation or offer input around the amendment of making parents as paid providers a permanent option in the program in Arizona. And those are publicized on the Access webpage. And we recently sent out a flyer about those. And if anyone is interested, we can sure get you that information about those outreach programs. I think I got it covered, unless anybody has any questions. Okay, thank you. Oops, hi, Rachel.
Hi, thank you so much. That was lovely. I really appreciate all the information and what you do. My son may want to pop over and say hi real quick, but say hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay.
Thank you. Love you. The ARPA funds, now is that specifically from COVID or is Dylan? Dylan, please. Dylan, one. Or is that like separate from COVID? Because I'm assuming like it happened during COVID. Is it COVID funds or not? and it doesn't really matter that much. And I would like also the information about the access forums for parent providers, if when you get a chance.
Sure.
And then my other question, I guess, would just be, is there going to be any alternatives besides the positive behavior support, or is it only going to be positive behavior support that is going to be kind of taught through DDD?
You think those were simple questions. Let me go with the first, okay? The American Rescue Plan Act was legislation that passed in 2021, and it allows for all of the states that provide supports to be able to get funding for some special initiatives. There was an agreement that Access worked with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It's not just the Division of Developmental Disabilities that is receiving those funds, but I was just sharing with you about how our plans are about how we're using those funds. And the second question was about the dates of the Access public forums, right? Was that the second? I think so.
Can I continue my email?
Oh, that would be great. But what I'll do is I'll give them to Michelle. There's a flyer, Access with the flyer they published. And I will give the link to that to Michelle, and she'll get it out in a minute so that you all have that information. Okay.
Thank you.
When it comes to training, I want to be careful to say it's not really DDD doing the training. It's going to be through the qualified vendors and through our contract. And we will be directly training our direct support professionals around positive behavior support. But I'm curious if there's more to your question that I might be able to answer better. For example, let me try. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Indicate an internal indicator as a parent comes up for me when there's only kind of one method. Indicator.
Okay, so then let me tell you that through our contracted health plans, that there are ABA services that are available that may be appropriate for a member or family. There's counseling services. There's the training that's done through attendant care, but mostly through habilitation for our DDD members. All of those things are still going to be out there. What we're trying to do is to try to do kind of a ground level foundation to support direct support professionals and family members. Does that help a little bit?
Yes, and I just speak from, and as much as I don't like to say this after the Facebook comment, but, you know, in terms of learning about disabilities like autism, and, you know, my autistic son, you know, and how adults feel about some of the experiences they've had. And, you know, I always think when I was working in the inpatient hospital, you know, and you go back and you look at pictures from 50 years ago and how things were done. And I think, what is this going to look like in the future? And how in this moment can I be the best that I can be? So when I look back, you know, I'm treating people with compassion and empathy and options.
And I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Okay, Joseph? Tracewell?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Any updates?
Okay. I thought you were asking me to respond to something. Aside from the fact that we do have two vacancies in South at the moment, first two vacancies in the time that I've been manager down here. So we're a little bit understaffed. I don't think that should impact things too much, but just to let folks know, we're down an entry specialist as well as a fact finder.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you very much, Joseph. Mr. Jensen.
That covers it. Thank you.
Just wanted to make sure, give everybody a shot. Gosh, who else would there be under that heading? I don't think so. Now everybody else is better. Okay. Next is Larry.
Do you There's have me. Any...
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
It's okay. We are currently short a liaison. For those that know Jeffrey Yamamoto, he has left the IOC unit, and he is now working in a different unit in OIFA, and he is now a DCS liaison. So yeah, he's got a lot of really good experience, and I think he'll do well, and I think it's wonderful that he's been in that role for a long time. And Michelle is doing a great job in meeting the needs, but just to be mindful of the fact that currently we have one liaison that's going to be covering the entire state. So she's going to be assisting all five districts. So if she's not able to pick up a phone call right away, she'll try to get back to you as soon as she can. But the way, she's not a very big person, and we're spreading her thin. So I just want to make sure that everybody is aware of that, that she's, I know she's going to do a fantastic job. She knows what she's doing, but just to make sure that everybody was aware of that.
Yeah, I trained Jeffrey real good. He was rep down here at South when we were still meeting in person and stuff. Trained him real good, and then Leah took him away.
No, it wasn't Leah. It was a different... Leah's over the entire OIFA department. It was another manager that took Jeffrey away.
Well, she's over the entire OIFA, and he went into that.
Yeah, well, I'm just cutting Leah some slack. But yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody was aware of that. And if Michelle might need a little bit of extra time here and there, because she's dancing as fast as she can.
Understand.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulated Jeffrey on his promotion, I guess you'd call it. Okay, anybody else before I get in trouble again from the state updates? Okay, I was going to ask Larry, did you have any other updates?
The only other update I had for the committee would be the new fiscal year has started for the state. So year-end reports will be due in November 1st. So you have plenty of time, just to let you know. But if you don't have a subcommittee, I know you're a committee of four, but you could have a couple people on a subcommittee to do that year-end report. And I will send out the kind of the framework that's outlined in the manual of suggested items that should go in the report. I'll send that back out to the group, so it'll be on top of your inbox, so you'll have that.
You just send it to me. I'm going to be the one writing it.
Okay.
Because I've been around for the entire time, and I wrote the last one.
Okay, no problem. Just reach out to me or Michelle if you need help on formatting, whatever you need done. I'm here to help. And I also posted
the links. I need a large bank deposit. You asked for it, right. Larry.
I know I did. I left myself wide open there. So, yeah. But just please let me know if you need anything, and I'll be happy to help. That was the only other update I had for you.
Okay. And yeah, I unfortunately for in the July, I said, oh my God, because I remember last year.
No problem.
Yeah. Mario, you had a question?
No, it was just to get information, and Leah sent it. Thank you, Leah.
Okay, so we got from Larry. Now we're the, I just don't want to make sure to skip anybody. I'm sorry if I still have to read this thing. I do a lot of meetings. Updates from integrated health plans. Michelle, if you'd like to call on them.
Oh, okay. Currently we have Dawn McReynolds here and Ian Wilson. They're from United Healthcare.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Thank you, Keith. So I just wanted to take a moment and just explain that Ian Wilson has joined our special programs team. He is our member advocate and veteran liaison. So he will be joining these calls moving forward with me. And I just appreciate you welcoming him on board. Thanks.
That's not a problem. Did anybody else from UHC have any comments? One, two, three. Guess not. Okay. DDDA, Michelle, basically our liaison, everybody's liaison now.
I don't have much this month. I just wanted to remind the committee about the DDD public town hall meetings that are held monthly. You can find the dates on the website, but I also wanted to provide you with an update. The next DDD public town hall meeting is August 3rd from 6 to 8 p.m. And then the other, go ahead, Leah. Sure.
Well, I just am always grateful that you share that, Michelle. Thank you. And I want to let you know that our guest speaker is going to be Jana Merle with Raising Special Kids, and she's going to be talking about guardianship and alternatives to guardianship as a guest speaker.
Okay. Oh, that's really good information. And then the only other thing I wanted to let the committee know is I will be out of the office the end of July, so be patient with us. Joan and I are going to keep on top of our correspondence, but I did want to let you know that, and I'll send you that all that information so you have it ahead of time. But I'll be coordinating your meeting prior to the vacation so that I can get that information for you for when I'm in office.
Sorry, but being the scientist I am, I like, dates and stuff. When you say the end of the month, does that mean starting the 16th?
July 28th is when I will be gone, and I will return on August 8th.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's much better to have that.
Absolutely. I understand that completely. That's the end of my updates.
Mario asked what meeting would discuss guardianship, and that would be Leah, the town hall, right, on the 3rd of August?
Yes,
we do a public town hall the first Thursday of each month. The only month we don't meet is December. And the link to that meeting, when you go to the DDD homepage and just scroll to the bottom, the link is right there to attend. It's a Zoom meeting, and it starts at 6 p.m.
Is that enough information for you, Miriam? Not a problem. Yes, that's what we're here for. We all give each other information, any information.
A question about the town hall. Is there ever minutes posted after?
No, but we post the presentation always after. And to find it, when you go to the DDD webpage, that homepage in blue, it says actions related to COVID-19, because we kicked off this public town hall at the beginning of the public health emergency. And if you click on that link and you scroll down, there will be a link to the previous town hall presentations, and all of them are posted there.
Okay. Next topic is discussion on possible future membership. So, Sam, I wanted to ask your opinion. What did you think of the meeting today?
I mean, first of all, thank you for making sure I was kind of in the loop with everything. I really do appreciate that from all of you. I'm definitely interested. I did see just procedure-wise that I would have to apply online. So that's something that I would plan on doing afterward today.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I liked everything that I saw and heard and stuff like that. And again, thank you all for welcoming me in and everything. So I do really appreciate it.
Okay. One of the things I like to do in, you know, the districts I'm in is I will let you know this, that you will be able to receive not only Michelle's phone number, you'll get mine. Everybody shares everybody's phone number and email in case you have a question and I'm not available, or, you know, Michelle's going to be busy as a one-armed paper hanger, you know, something like that. You can talk to Mario, who, by the way, is the vice chair, or Rochelle, or Octavia. So that way you can get, any one of us can get in contact with any one of us, because you might not be able to get in contact with the first person you try.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like to share that, and it always helps, you know, because you may hear something that none of us hear. And that kind of thing helps.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought I'd let you know that. So it's a very open communication lines. So, and, you know, any help you'll need, Michelle will make sure you get it. Anyway, okay. Are there any more questions or comments? See, now we don't have any. This is asking Rochelle. You don't have any IRs or behavioral treatment plans we need to discuss, do you? Rochelle? Rochelle?
I'm sorry, Keith, are you speaking to me?
No, Rochelle, not Michelle.
Oh, Rachel. Okay.
Rachel, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm sorry, what was it?
You don't have any questions about IRs?
No, but I did leave you a message. Dylan, one second. If maybe we talked about going over them off of the meeting, and I would like that and appreciate that at some time.
Yeah, I tried to this weekend. You didn't answer.
Probably, yeah. I was supposed to bury my mom's ashes yesterday. It was a hard weekend, but so sorry about that if I missed you.
I just wanted you to know I didn't, you know, forget you or let you out, you know.
It's okay, just... yeah, I thought you were ditching me, but
no, well, I wouldn't do that.
Well,
so you don't have it. I just need a yes or no. Do you have anything that we need to discuss about them?
No. Not right now.
Octavia?
No, sir. I have nothing to discuss.
Miriam?
No.
Neither do I. So we do not need an executive session. So I need a motion. Okay, Joseph Tracewell. I thought he was here.
I dropped momentarily. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't notice, Joseph. My fault. So I need from one of the IOC members, just so you understand, Sam, I need a motion so we can adjourn the meeting.
I motion that we adjourn the meeting, IOC South meeting at 2:11 p.m.
I need a second.
Second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, I need each person to say yes or no. Octavia?
Aye.
Rachel?
Aye.
Mariel?
Aye.
Aye. Then it is in unanimous that this meeting, as of 12:12 on the 10th of July, this meeting is now done.
2:12, Keith.
What?
2:12.
Yeah, that's. I'm sorry. I thought that's what I said.
You said 12:12.
I'm sorry. Anybody wants to shoot me, they can shoot me. As of 2:12. Sorry, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much all for being here and for all the information we got. thank you very much for coming, Sam, and finding out what's going on. I hope you follow through with the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you again.
Like I said, even, you know, if you have questions before you want to or whatever, you can call me and, you know, I'll give you the boots in the trenches point of view.
All right, thank you.
Okay, y'all have a very good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Yeah, Sam, real quick, can you, nobody else needs to stay, if, but I kind of, your introduction of what you do and you started, I'm sorry, can you repeat that again? I know it'll be in the notes, but.
Yeah. So 3DA is the nonprofit that I started about a year and a half ago. And it really serves to advocate for individuals with developmental disabilities, which is obviously why I'm on this call. But really, kind of a two-way approach to it. One is obviously like the social media aspect, so like educating people on the issues, the mishaps, a lot of things that the general public doesn't know. And then the other side of it is really connecting with different organizations, groups, governments, stuff like that. So I'm sort of still getting off the ground with the outreach. The long-term goal is to be connected within all 50 states. I've really only connected with like three or four thus far. But that's the long-term vision, at least.
And you're not in Arizona?
I am in Arizona. Yes, oh, I am in Arizona. Okay. Yeah, I'm in Mesa. 3DA is filed through Arizona, but our reach is to be beyond just Arizona, if that makes sense.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Thanks for doing
thank
that.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for asking. So appreciate that.
But. Like I said, you all have a very good day now.
Thank you, you as well.
Better end the call, or I'll keep talking. Bye, guys.